then we do decide to shed the free. That's why they say, the question has always come up, why do masters die? If they are masters of life and death, why do they have to die? This, you can see, is a question that will come up in their rational mind. It's not that they have to die. Masters are only realized souls who use the physical frame for exemplary service to other individuals who believe they have a soul, until they have enough strength to shed off the concept and stand up on their own 2 feet. Then they go on and leave them, knowing that they are now capable of living a soul. The master is not going to pamper you. In fact, the master is one who is he's tougher than your father, he's tougher than your mother, he's tougher than the worst jailer in jail. He's tougher than the biggest slave master possible you can dream up in. He's tougher than that. But he's far more loving than your father can be, or a mother can be, or a wife can be. And at the same time, a master is the only true godfather you ever had. You know, when Christian people say you get baptized, you have a godfather or a godmother. Only the master is a godfather, because he is the God-man. He is the man that godfathers you, or father you Godward in yourself. He's the only man can do that, because he is in that state of consciousness. But he helps us to get to that state. Then we see ourselves. Now in meditation, this final phase is what he brings us to the point we are freed while we are living. A master does not leave us halfway. Now, if he has 50 disciples, he's going to pass on to one or two of them the total awareness. And the other 48 may not be competent or capable of handling the total awareness. Nevertheless, that one or two who has the awareness transferred will live long enough to raise another 4 or 6 more out of the 50. And the rest will be struggling too. And when they go on, that first two, that 4 or 6 that remain, they will also be strong enough to lift up another 6. And they'll go on, and eventually that whole 50 will be all lifted out by the principle of which it has been set up. Now this is true, and you have an example, very good example of it, especially in the life of the Master Jesus. The Master Jesus had 12 disciples. When he was in the body, none of the 12 got cosmic consciousness, except one man, and he was not even a disciple. When I say a disciple, he did not follow him around as a disciple as the 12 men did. Yet he was the only man that the Master Jesus bestowed cosmic consciousness on. The Master Jesus told his 12 men at the Last Supper, they'll all leave him. And they all jump up with pride, me Master? You can imagine somebody tells you that, and you've been with them so long, and you start examining yourself. Where did I go wrong? But the Master Consciousness is perceiving what you are. He's perceiving the structure of your nature, what you will do. What is your lessons to learn? You're not complete, so you got to learn these lessons. You don't know what it is to make a mistake in failing someone until you fail them. Yes. And it could be very insignificant when you fail them, but it could be a tremendous catastrophe in your mind. Well, these 12 men had to pass these tests. Yet there was one man who was not among the 12, and that was the thief on the cross. And the recognition comes from the words and the communication between a master and disciple. This is how we recognize them, and how we know there is a transference of this knowledge being given to them, or uplifting or lifting up. These two men were being crucified along with the Master Jesus, and one said to him, the Master Jesus, why are you so great? Why don't you come off? You heal the sick, you raise the dead, why don't you heal yourself now? Why do you have to die? It's a rational mind. We will all do the same thing. I'm not beyond that. I'll be guilty of that too. That's a part of life I may have to pass through to make those same mistakes. until we learn better. And there was the other one who says, you have no right to condemn this man. We have a right to be hanging up here, not him. He didn't do anything. That very man turned now to the man Jesus and said, these were his specific words. He didn't say teacher. He didn't say sir. He didn't say Mr. Jesus. He said master. The very first word he used, master. Remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. Now this last statement can be very misleading to most people who are unaware of what a disciple relationship with a master is. For most of us would say, master, remember me when you come into your kingdom. As if you're challenging him or demanding something from him. Or he has a right to give you something. Or he has a right to remember you. Or, master, remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. There's a big difference. Only a disciple knows that statement thoroughly. And only from personal experience can a disciple vouch for the last statement as being the correct one and not the first one, as what went on between the thief and the man on the cross. If these two men were about the same age, let alone forget there was a spiritual connotation between the two men, or connection, they might have seen each other as boyhood friends, and one decided to be a minister and the other one decided to be a rebel or a revolutionist, and they ended up now hanging on the cross together. And one could say, you know, you didn't have to hang up here like this, you know, you could have come my way. The other, yeah, we could have all chased the Romans out of this country. You didn't have to go that way. What's the big difference? A disciple, once he sees the master consciousness and he recognizes it, he's recognizing something from within himself, like Peter was recognizing something from within himself when he said, thou art Christ, Son of the living God. This is a personal experience occurring in that man's consciousness, that he knew that this was his master. Not just for this present body form, but that this body form was total consciousness was passing to him in many, many body forms, and in many, many levels of awareness. That's why he said to him, remember me. In other words, lift me out from the levels of consciousness that I have dropped down and I've identified with the various thought patterns, and cannot seem to get out and cannot solve the problem of behavior within my own makeup. When thou comest into thy kingdom. Now what kingdom is this man going to go to? He's dying on a cross. Is he going to Mars? He's on the earth. Is the earth the only place where intelligent beings exist? The question comes up, is there another kingdom? Or is there another level of existence that we are totally unaware of, that this thief was fully aware of? If the thief is fully aware of a level of existence, and the Master Jesus went in the body, told his own disciples, there was a level of existence, I go to prepare a place. In my Father's house there are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you. If it were not so, I'll tell you. And he made an issue of saying, if it were not so, I'll tell you. Now, certainly, if he is a master, he cannot lie. And if he's lying, then we've all the victims of a big lie. You follow me? Now, realization can vouch for it. Meditation can vouch for these masters' truth. Because they say, in their own words, heaven and earth will pass away, but not one word of mine shall pass away. Anything they have said or done can be validated by the meditative science. And we are the recipients of that science, man today. We are left with this knowledge, but we are not using it to validate it. Now we are forced to validate it. Are we going to validate our heritage? Are we going to accept God now? Or are we just going to accept being the victim of our circumstances or our environment? No, we can. We have the life within us, we have the intelligence within us, and we have the methods left to us to validate. Therefore, we will validate it. Regardless or in spite of ourselves, the creative intelligence will force us to validate it. This is one peculiar thing of God. In spite of ourselves, we are forced to eventually, by the laws of evolution, we will be forced to validate all these truths about divinity. we will have to go from agricultural society to industrial society to space society and beyond the stars for it even to validate what is being said, because it is the law of life. Now, meditation will follow us all the way. It's a peculiar thing. The Master Jesus was aware of the thief on the cross. Therefore, his answer, his reply, proved what the thief knew and experienced. He said to the thief, "On this day, thou shalt be with me in paradise." Now, is paradise somewhere in the galaxies? Is paradise a state of awareness? On this day, on this 24th day of June, or whatever it was, or this Good Friday, was no, or was he saying something totally different? Dear friend, at this very instant, here, man, experience total awareness. You and I are in it now. You and I are the same one reality. Both of us are one in God. There's no difference. There's no depth. It's all life. So don't, for one moment, falter now, because we are all dying from the sensation of pain. The five senses is still pulling back. We associated with through pain, you know, and yet pain is important. If we have no pain, and were we injured and become numb, before we get medical attention, we'll be all dead people. But because of pain, and through pain, we can incite sensation in these cells until medical attention arrives to keep you alive. So don't knock pain. Happen to say, because I was a living example of the experience. I know what the difference lies, that pain is important as well as not important. Pain is necessary under certain circumstances, and it's not necessary under certain circumstances. So, you can hold your consciousness within this frame without having to leave it via pain. Or you can lose this consciousness and go out, never return into this physical frame by hiding or rejecting pain. And it's easy to do that by dulling the senses. The more you dull the senses, the more this consciousness takes over and you become unaware. Now, the masters have always said, if liberation is the final goal, while living, and meditation offers this as a personal experience, tangible experience, then everyone should learn the art of how to die. Now this may sound tragic, sounds so for a young person, but that's not what is intended. The art of how to die to your five senses in order to be awake within your extrasensory nature, within a physical body. Therefore, St. Paul said, in his own statement, reversing it, he says, "I rebuke you in your rejoicing," that is, I rebuke you people for overindulging to the five senses, because I live and die daily in this consciousness. I am capable of shutting on, turning on this vital power within my mechanism daily, instantly, knowing that when this mechanism has served its purpose of lifting up others who are in need of being lifted up, I eventually will leave it. And the I in me would never die, because the I in me is eternal, like the man on the thief on the cross. You know, the thief on the cross, he was experiencing the same soul. He said that on this day you will be in me. Now, at this very instant, you are going to experience this transition from between being locked up in your five senses in death, or to be awake in your consciousness in death. Now, we have an example of man being raised from the dead, who was locked up in his consciousness in death. And that was Lazarus. Lazarus was a wealthy man, you know, he wasn't a poor man. And he was one of Jesus' sponsors, because Jesus stayed there. But he wanted to prove to Lazarus that he could not carry his wealth to the grave, so he let Lazarus die. When they says, "But Master, you helped so many people, why could you come and help your brother Lazarus?" And you know, the brothers and sisters are all crying, here he stayed in this man's house, and he's his best friend, and here, of all people, he should have been more interested. That wasn't the reason why he let the man die. A master and a disciple had a relationship. He saw that this man was locked up in his senses to what he thought was important. That's why he could not leave and follow him as a disciple. And he didn't say, when he said leave and follow me as a disciple, don't mean to throw away everything. let your consciousness separate from your possession to your inner self. There are lots of great masters who have many disciples in this world who are multimillionaires who have absolutely no desire for their millions, living right here in America. This master had one such master for a disciple. The man had already achieved the ability to shut off his association from his millions and seek the devotional life within himself, and did achieve this in this material and did not live in a monastery. And this man achieved mukti, he achieved the liberation freed while living in the physical body. So we know that by meditation it is possible that this condition can be brought on. Now, in Lazarus' case, Jesus just allowed him to pass on to let him experience that he could not take the consciousness, he could not carry the possession into the grave. Then he brought him out and he was a different man after, because he was freed now for the first time from the attachment to physical objects. Now, many of us, when we go out of this frame, either by natural law or by accident or some form, may not go out free from attachment, because you do not know what you are attached to. Can you say what things you are attached to and what you are not attached? If you analyze your whole consciousness, what single idea are you free from? You don't know. If we all knew, then we'd junk it right away, but we can't, see? And I show you a little illustration in my own self. I had an accident once. Fell from about 30 feet. And I had 54 compound fractures. When I hit the ground, I saw my whole life go out of my body. And I was in every planet of the universe. It was a marvelous experience. I didn't want to come back. Who wants to come back knowing you have this total freedom? Knowing you have the total awareness? Who wants to come back? You look at the body in the ground, heck, you know, you can have it. There's none here really holding me, because there are no walls, no doors, no, nothing holding you back. It's total freedom. And then the inner consciousness is saying, you have to go back because you have certain unfulfilled functions. That means you cannot just throw yourself out. If those conditions are finished, then you don't come back. If it's unfinished, you have to come back. So I find myself slipping back into the body. Now, I'm coming back into the body. And what I'm leading to is how I'm going to discover what I'm attached to now. I did not know what I'm attached to. I find my body all of a sudden starting to be numb, right up to the lips. And I knew if it went to my eyes, I might as well give up, because then there's no more help and I'm not in no medical hand yet to get help. So I realized there the consciousness start to permeate now. And you will be surprised how fast your consciousness can work. It's faster than the speed of light squared. My consciousness is working that fast, it's computing mathematically everything, what's going on. And it's telling me, create pain or you die. No, it's not my physical consciousness, it's the higher consciousness which holds the body together is telling me that. So how do I create pain? I put the finger in my mouth and I start to bite. But I couldn't feel nothing. The teeth have no sensation, you know, when you're numb. You ever get injection from a dentist? Can you bite? You can't bite. So imagine the whole body is already like if it's in a state of cocaine, right up to the to the hair. And I'm trying to create pain in a numb area. I'm biting. I must be biting for nearly 5 minutes till I get the first sensation, and it's been bitten real hard to create the sensation of pain. The first sensation of pain causes the eyes to dilate. Now, if you're dying, or you're in an accident or anything, and your consciousness is leaving you, the first sensation of the eyes are the eyeballs that start to go like this, start to go down. And eventually, when you do die, they pull themselves up, and they stick up in the brain, because the energy goes out via the medulla. And you're pulled out by the optical energy, because God is in the light already. You are locked up into it. Your whole vital current is locked up in there with your breath. And when you leave your body through conscious experience, you pass out the same way. Except those who pass out by psychic phenomena through the solar plexus. Now, St. Paul had this experience and he knew how to go out. Now, this experience was coming on me. And I had to bite, and when I did start to feel the pain, then my eyes started to pull back. I'm seeing the relationship, and I started to see clearly now. I start to keep on biting, and the sensation of pain started to descend. As I keep biting, the sensation started to descend, and it stopped just above here. From here on, I'm clear. I can feel myself. I can touch and pinch my ears, and I know I'm alive. From here on, I don't feel anything, so I'm not worried. As long as I'm seeing and I'm not going to fall asleep, I'm staying awake. And awake means to be alive. Now, concentration means to focus one attention. And that means to be alive. So when it says, do you concentrate? Ask yourself, am I alive? If you are alive, you're concentrating. If you're dead, you can't concentrate. So you're not focusing. You're not centralizing your energies. So I'm pulling in, and right away I see this light coming down. There was a light starting to descend. From this light, I can feel life now come. Well, until I got into the hospital, and the doctor stuck the hypodermic into my arm, and I knew I was under medical attention. Right then, my brain, for the first time, fluctuated and went to something that was important to me. I considered the time important to me. Having totally disregard for what had happened to this physical frame. The thing that I was thinking of, I have 3 employees that I have to provide work for tomorrow. I own a store and I got to open up at 7 o'clock. This was hanging on my mind, and here I am. I didn't even know the extent of the damage of my body. And this is so predominant in my mind. Now I begin to realize, what is my attachment? The attachment wasn't this body. The attachment wasn't the sense of death. The attachment is these 3 people. And they're only employees to me, in a sense, and a business that I have to, and the bills I have to pay. It's the funny thing. So, okay. So I said to myself, when he gave me the injection, I'm going to wake up 7 o'clock next morning, because that's when I have to open this door. So I'm picturing a clock in my brain, a long arm at 12 and a short arm at 7. And again, the pain starts to disappear now. It's coming right up, and I went totally blank. Now, in the last state of my mind, and this is what the masters are saying again, is what your whole thing that pulls your life back into your body. It has to do with the principle of life and breath. And I'm out. All of a sudden, I am thinking, it goes to show you how this phenomenon of the brain works. I am thinking that it is 7 o'clock in the morning, and this happened on Wednesday night. Ring, 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 like an alarm clock. Wake up, Adano, wake up. It's 7 o'clock, wake up. And I can see this big clock right there banging, and I see the long arm. And I'm struggling to get out of this stupor. You know, you want to wake up in the morning, how it's tough to get up, and you don't want to get up. Well, I'm struggling to get up. And I did like this, and I heard some voices said, well, if he doesn't die now, he'll never die. And right then I said, who is dying? The shock, you know, the fact. And they nearly pulled down all the plasma. And I'm seeing my friend standing in the room. My mind is fluctuating again. How can he be in my room? I locked the door. This is Thursday morning. I say, hey, how you get inside? My conversation is betraying the fluctuation of mind and my attachment. He says, hey, you're in the hospital. I said, hospital? What day is this? This Thursday morning? He says, no, this is Saturday at 3 o'clock. Loss of time, the attachment that brings my life back into my body to wake me up in a conscious state. Now you see what reincarnation can put you in while you wake up bawling and the doctor take care of your mother from the umbilical cord. You're in the wrong environment with the wrong set of ideas, confined to a physical body of only 8 or 9 pungs, and you got a ball. There's nothing else for you to do, but you're restricted. There's nothing else you can do. So you find your straitjacket. And I found I had to accept lying in the hospital like that. Why? I couldn't go anyplace, do anything. So sooner or later the mind starts to absorb now the new impressions. Realizing this, I realize now why they say you have to learn to rid your consciousness. By meditation, you have to wash it out like daily of the attachments, the things. It may seem kind of cold to say you have a business and you owe these people these things, but you don't have no responsibility to them. In emotional nature, you feel you have. In a real devotional nature, you don't have. Because in the devotional nature, what would have happened had I really broken the attachment to them? I would not have to go back into the body when I fell out the first time. But then, my consciousness to those people who I was helping or trying to help in meditation, I would be present with them more. Now, this is how a master is able to work with his disciples. You see, the disciples of Jesus were not helped the most spiritually while he was in the body. It's after he left the body, and having no physical attachment for the physical world pertaining to himself, he had now a devotional quality developed to help his 12 disciples after. That's why he came back to them. Now, he had this devotional nature open, so there was no attachment, it was total freedom. So he picked up the body again with his total freedom now, because he could lay it down and pick it up, so having no repercussion from thinking, having no craving, having no responsibility in an emotional nature now. He don't have no business or anything. He was strictly a teacher in truth. So he lifted the body back, came to his disciples, and reaffirmed their faith in him and themselves, and at the same time lift them to a higher plateau of awareness, and emphasized that they meditate, that the meditative science was the thing they had to do. And this is the final thing about the liberation. That's why you see, resurrection is greater than reincarnation. Now, until we realize the purpose of resurrection, we're going to keep reincarnating. And the masters have always said the only reason why the soul reincarnates because of an unfulfilled desire. Now, when all desires are fulfilled or all attachments are eliminated, then we achieve resurrection. And this is a natural law. You see? Now, the trees reincarnate, but the butterfly resurrect. You have it right in front of you all the time. You see? Every summer, every spring, every winter, every autumn is the same tree, the same apple growing, coming up all the time. It's reincarnating. Hasn't changed. But you don't see that when a butterfly comes out from a maggot or a caterpillar. He's a transformation from caterpillar to butterfly. After he spins his own web, he is the only creature showing you the principle of resurrection by spinning his own cocoon, which you call the shroud. Every principle of creation around you is truth of yourself, because we are the epitome, we are the whole crux of it all. But it's hard for us to comprehend as tissue, because we don't see much of it. We see it happening around us, and it's alien and foreign to us, and it's separate from us. And we have dismal recollection of a few people who are supposedly to have done it, and it's hammered into our brain to a point where we get a sort of a constipation of hearing it too often, not recognizing what is really happening, till we are confronted with having to experiment now for ourselves. And I don't blame the young people who take all kinds of chemicals to experiment, because what has it got to do to find out what's going on inside? But the masters will tell you this. There is no shortcut to the extrasensory realm. If it was so, they had all the opportunity, thousands of years, to fight it. They didn't. Because you could not fool the early Jewish people, because they were well versed in psychic phenomena. They knew about hypnotism and all psychic phenomena. That's why they said that Thomas wasn't doubting Jesus, because he was a doubting man. He was a scientific man. He wanted to know, is this the same thing we're going to have again? Is this another apparitional technique somebody's going to pull off on us? No. With all the things that the Master Jesus did, there are certain evidence that separates the psychic from the saint. The evidence is always after the phenomena, which you call a phenomena, it's not a phenomenon. The act is complete. There is certain tangible evidence that involves physical labor, physical work. In Jesus' case, the final thing to Thomas, he made him work for it. Say, come feel, friend, touch, make sure. He had to work to go up and touch the man. You know, that's why the Master Yogananda says, you want to see Jesus, you meditate. Keep meditating until he eats a piece of bread or something. You got tangible proof that the Master Jesus is not a figment of your imagination. Or none of these great masters are a figment of imagination. Men who have fully realized God. As they say, lives of great men all remind us. But the lives of the great men don't mean people who knock you in the head and become great, you know. It's those who have made the life within the mechanism great by concentrating how to evaluate it and to lift it up. That's the difference. These are the men we're talking about. So, these masters are masters of life itself.
We have a few questions.
Yes, sure.
It seems to me that you have said here that meditation is the means to the end of the realization that I am I. When you look inside and see whatever color lights you do see, and realize that you are one with God, this realization, it seems to me, would destroy you as a human being, because it would destroy the simple essence of human being of free will, free choice. Because you couldn't have free choice. Once you realize that you were one with God, your free choice would be gone. And it would seem that this would be the end.
No.
Not the beginning, as it should be.
No, Abraham. That ain't what it is. In the first place, you are never going to be free from anything. What you are being freed is to be freed for. You're never freed from responsibility or from choice. You're going to be free for the first time to choose. And for responsibilities to be put upon you so that you can choose correctly. This is the first time you can really choose. You're not choosing yet. You're choosing with error. You're not choosing unerringly.
Yeah.
So that's not choice no more. That's circumstantial pressure. When you are free as a real person, free from within, you are not freed from responsibility, you are freed for responsibility.
Let me put it another way. Anyone who has ever looked through a microscope and seen a simple one-celled animal knows that this cell has irritability, which you spoke of. It has reproductivity. It can assimilate, and it can eliminate, and it can move. These are the five essences of life. This combination of elements, inorganic materials, in this cell is mathematically impossible by chance. So we know it had to be put together by a divine intelligence. This is one knowledge. It is not difficult to believe. As a matter of fact, it's difficult not to believe it because there's so much evidence around. And that man and the higher primates, certainly in this extremely complex, super complex of specialized cells that they have, could never, in all of the time, could become a mathematical possibility of chance. Therefore, again, this is a desubstantiation of this, but the higher realization on a different plane, again, that when you look so far inward that you realize that you are not just a child of God, but that you are yourself God, or oneness with God, is an untenable position to remain living in this phase that we're in. It would seem to be impossible. If you really, truly realize it, how can you have contact and intercourse with the rest of the human race, knowing this? Or do you know this? Do you really, truly, yourself know that you are one with God? Have you heard, I am I? You see the distinction I mean now? Mm-hmm.
the distinction you're making.
Pardon me?
I said the distinction that you're making is only in relation to mind, M-I-N-D. There is no separation at no time, never was. An electrical current in this building lights all the bulbs in various sockets, in various parts of the room.
Granted, everything that we perceive and everything that is.
So you're experiencing exactly what I'm experiencing at the same time. But you are unaware of it, that's all. Being unaware doesn't make you any less. Or being aware doesn't make you any more important. The fact is that it's there.
I think if my awareness reached that vibration, I couldn't bear to be a human.
That's the time you are a human being. That's the first time you are a human being. You begin to see what a human being is for the first time. Until you are aware of this true nature, you don't know what human being is. Come, let us make man in our own image and likeness. Male and female, create them.
Let me either clarify or muddy the waters more by saying this.
Yeah.
I believe that every soul is an emanation of God, whether it be a light or a splendor or however you want to express it, that must live all of the knowledge that there is, to know all of the truths, both good and bad, the depths of depravity to the essence of saintliness, before he then is resurrected and goes back to the Godliness. And it would seem that looking inward and knowing that you are this essence, knowing, I don't mean saying, giving lip service to it, thinking, believing, suspecting, but knowing this, that then would be the essence of it.
It doesn't destroy anything.
Pardon?
It doesn't destroy anything. You never lose your individuality. You never lose anything. You gain everything you have. You're not losing anything. In fact, you are regaining. You're regaining what you don't even begin to use yet.
I would think that you would refined in the sense of purity, in the sense of the refining of a metal or the refining of an energy to one point. And this point would be both the Alpha and the Omega, the full circle.
Yes, but that doesn't take away anything from you. Doesn't take away anything from you.
Would have removed everything of me but this one essence.
No. As I said, this is the first, that would be the first time you will know you would be you.
You will, I would be me, then I would be that part of God, or which cannot be divided, which is God, and I would cease to exist.
That's only an intellectual experience, it's not a reality. You are always going to be, regardless of how many times you see yourself inside of yourself, and how many times you realize this Godness is in you. You are not going to...
I should hope I'm indestructible, yes.
Yes, you're not going to go no place. That's why Paul said, I live and die daily in it.
I wouldn't go any place, but I would be everywhere.
Well, that's what it is.
May I ask a question along
that's what it is.
Mind?
Omnipresence.
Are not there many points to God? That is, God exists in many places in the form of points. The solar logos, planetary logos, these are way beyond me. And if I think of God as being a sort of a hierarchy, like the army system, and yet these are all points in the divinity. The divinity exists everywhere, and I hope to become one of those. Well, in fact, I am one of the points known as a monad in some nomenclature, but as you said, I'm not fully conscious of this position, but becoming conscious of it doesn't make me less human. any more than becoming conscious of a position makes a solar logos less in charge of this solar system, or a galactic logos less in charge of a galaxy. Yet they're all one with God. I mean, this presupposes a definition of God which is even beyond me. And I can't imagine that I would lose my humanity. There are masters who are as gods to me, and yet they have elected to stay with humanity as humans, as teachers.
I was simply trying to define the level of the vibration of this knowledge. Where is this level? I mean, is it the essence in the end, or is it a step along the way?
Let it be so high that you can no longer exist in a human form. Is this what you're saying?
I mean, how can you know some without knowing at all? If you realize that you are oneness with God, this seems to me to be the end. And
no.
Also the beginning.
No.
Well, if you leave humanity, you will not cease to exist. Your idea is if you reach this point, you will leave humanity.
I would think you would no longer be human.
Well, you see, the thing is this. Let me put it this way. When you're sound asleep, are you man or woman?
Why, I don't think there's any really point in discussing that. I think I'm both.
But
I'm sure I've been a woman in previous incarnations, and I'm probably certain I will be in.
But that doesn't prove that you are man or woman.
I'm neither.
That
I happen to occupy a man's body at this time.
Yes, but the thing that occupies, what is it?
Pardon?
The thing that occupies, what is it?
It's electrical energy.
All right. Has it got form?
Yes.
All right. Is it positive or negative?
It should be balanced.
All right. Well, is there any end to it? Is there any start to it?
I hope not.
So if there's no start, no end, aren't you it already? That doesn't detract you from being a human being yet.
I'm not completely convinced of it.
You see, this is where you have to experience it.
Yes.
See, that's why they say it's only through the experience that
In the first place, the golden light must be out of our realm of spectrum, because we do not have a golden light in the spectrum of, when you break up white light, there is not a gold light.
But until you experience it, then it will be there. That's why Paul says, I rebuke you, meaning the world, in your rejoicing, your involvement through the five senses. For I, Paul, live and die daily in this consciousness. He says he's able to go in and out of this mechanism. Like the current coming in and out of a bulb, when it's turned on and off by the will, the switch.
I, like you, I realize, certainly without a question of a doubt, that this is only one step. I also have died and come back to this body. And had very nearly the same experience you had.
So there is no end to to yourself. You're always there.
But it seemed from your progression and your development of your thesis that you were telling me that this looking inward, finally seeing the truth, would have necessitated the end, because it seems to me this is what you would see when you pass from this plane onto the next plane.
Yeah, all right. Let me ask you one question.
You would see the big picture, so to speak.
Let me ask one simple question. Well, it's one simple question. If you were going on a journey to a foreign country, you had no maps, no one to inform you when you got there, would you know you've got there?
If I were completely outside of any recognizable frame of reference, I don't know if I would or not. I would have to look took what I had with me when I got there to find out if I knew I was there.
Right. And it will all be relative to what you carry with you.
Your frame of reference, huh? Yes.
So, in pure energy, would be the same result. Pure consciousness would be the same result. That's why we never lose anything. We take ourselves into the pure consciousness and the pure energy. Solve it? Good. This is what it is all about. We take ourselves to it. You see, the divinity is pure consciousness and pure energy. It's only modifying itself to suit our relative frames. That's why we can never lose our identity or our humanistic qualities or anything. We're never going to lose anything. In fact, we're gaining the trueness of it. And
yes,
it's,
I hope I'm more precious than that.
Oh, yes. See, the thing is, the preciousness of the humanistic function of our nature is based on the fact that we can generate love. We have this quality within us to generate it. And if we can generate it, whenever we are involved in the pure consciousness and the pure energy, we'll be constantly generating love to the frame of reference that we came from.
We can also generate hate.
Right.
And all the other goodies.
Right. So the thing is, we take it to into the consciousness. So there is no loss or any depreciation of yourself, because that's what the masters are saying to us when we realize that thing, that we are not going to be freed from anything. This is an illusion to think that we're going to be freed from responsibilities or free from human qualities or free from human condition. No. We are going to be freed for them. In other words, if you never had responsibility before, you'll get them now. And if you never had the time to be a human being, this is the time you're really going to experience what it is to be human.
Yes.
In other words, if pain never bothered you now, this is going to show you what the human body can take or what it can't take. In other words, you're going to be forced into greater conditions, not with the sense of self-destruction or sense of de-evaluation of yourself. It is a sense of establishing the quality of yourself. You see, you're establishing the humanness of yourself. You see, why did he make man? Why did he take an organism and put consciousness into it? It was only to establish the humanness of it so that it can demonstrate divinity. See, God could do without us, you know. If you want to put it that way.
Think we have less time.
What? Because he became us. You see, when we say he became us, it's very hard to comprehend at times. Pure consciousness and pure energy slowed down and manifested itself as matter. And within this manifested form, it endowed itself with the capacity to organize. Now, in the organization, it gave it choice either to depreciate or appreciate, to degenerate or regenerate. Now, since we don't know how to regenerate, we first have to degenerate. We always destroy ourselves first before we build ourselves up. So we think we are not humans by trying to be non-human to another human being. And this is our first attempt to humanism. Our first attempt to rediscover ourselves as human beings. So we say that by hitting him on the head, it'll make me more human, because when he hits me back, I'll find out what it is to be hit on the head. But this is the first approach we go by.
Do you feel that as every molecule must be balanced, that every soul must also seek this balance by the positive and negative through all the experiences and through all the
that is from the mind's view. that is not from the soul's view. Remember this. God breathed into man, or consciousness vibrated upon organism. An organism became a living soul.
Say that again.
Consciousness vibrated upon organisms, and organisms became a living soul, or an organism became a living soul. In other words, God breathed the breath of life into man, and man became a living soul. Man did not become a living mind or a living body. The scripture is explicit. And if we say it's not that, then we can say, don't use that as a reference point for the statement. Let us observe from research.
I could be mistaken, but I don't believe that that's the tenet, the philosophy of Edgar Cayce.
Edgar Cayce never said that the man had a soul. He said man was soul. I've read Cayce too. And he was a firm believer that man was soul. In fact, he went even further to make...
soul came first, then into the organism. He looked the organism over pretty closely before he went into it. One of the higher anthropoid apes.
Again, we're talking of something different. You see, what Cayce is inferring there is something different. You're talking of reincarnating into an organism.
We can't get away from this.
I'm talking of the very start.
Incarnation.
I'm talking of the start of the structure of man. In the very structure of man, he is soul. Now, reincarnating is involved with his mind. Because it's only through the attachment in your mind, and that attachment fed by the life energy, do you reincarnate. If there is no attachment in that mind of yours, the life energy has nothing to feed on. It has nothing to pour itself into. You first have to have an idea for the mind to latch onto. That's why I said before, when the Master Jesus left his disciples, there was no idea of attachment in his mind. Now, in my experience, I had an attachment in my mind. I didn't have an attachment in my life energy. My life energy fed the idea in my mind that I had a business, 3 people to support and maintain work and open up next day and bills to pay. That was my mental attachment. Now, as far as my life was concerned, that would be the end of me. Stop the breath. But what would happen to Mr. Boris here? The cops will have to come in and haul away a dead individual. And this, again, would be an attachment to what I feel for them in the physical frame. You see, what is in the mind and what is in the life principle are two different things altogether.
How old were you when this happened?
Oh, in 1952.
At what age?
I was 32.
32. I was
much younger than this. I was about 15. Now, Donald, yes. Even though, it's pretty hard to phrase the question. I guess the answer is there always are attachments, but even if you seem to die without attachments, would you not reincarnate anyway in order to learn lessons you had not learned?
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. When we're using the word reincarnating and resurrecting, we are using it in two different aspects, Paul. Reincarnating occurs faster than the resurrecting principle. Masters resurrect and masters reincarnate. Now, they don't reincarnate because they have any attachment in their mind. They are strictly a voluntary principle that comes into a body either by one of 4 methods. The one method is that the moment they're born, and that's the very instant of born, they have the total memory of all their past lives. They don't lose that because they are masters already. They know it all the way till they grow up and take over the mastery of themselves in the physical world. Then they have a second way to be born, in which they're born by immaculate conception, or what you call extrasensory insemination. Then they have a third way to be born, that is by direct materialization. And then there's a fourth way in which they are born, that is by a normal birth, in which they recall just 1 or 2 incarnations and then open up after. Now, if they are not realized, they will be born, but they will not recall an incarnation. They couldn't recall anything, they're not realized. See, there's no... Now, once they decide to come back, to use a physical frame, they can pick any frame they want to come back in. They'll pick a cripple and come back in it. Only because they have a particular purpose in it. There is no desire on their part. Let's say, for instance, the level of intellect has reached such a condition among certain people where they are so inhuman to each other, where there is no ray of hope among the crying mothers or daughters or sons or fathers, then a consciousness that will lift them up will decide now, the lowliest of all, and be born there just for the sake of giving them inspiration to pull them out. Now, this consciousness can perceive already what may happen. There may be a cataclysm in the next 20 years or 30 years to come that will wipe them all out. And the consciousness will decide now, because of the incurred hatred and the intense emotional pull, these people are setting up psychic waves, because thought is energy already, that will trigger off and fracture off this cataclysm. Because matter because it's a stone, is no difference, because it's still consciousness is involved. And a master consciousness knows this, that if they don't help that level of evolution, it's going to destroy itself. Now, maybe it was intended to be destroyed, and they would not even intercede, and they will recede back into cannibalism. But if they do intercede, and they come in, they will pick the lowliest of them. They never pick the highborn. They'll pick the lowliest, because that's the one that has the most pain and aggravation to fight with. Because I said before, through the meditative process, they have achieved peace, they have achieved consciousness, and they have achieved strength. Now, the fourth thing I said, the extrasensory forces, is a gift to them. They didn't go out looking for it. This is something that is added to them. They bring that with them as a bonus. Now, when they come into this lowly aspect, they are coming with an inner peace. The first thing in that grieving family, this child is unusual. It seems to give the family little hope, little peace. It doesn't cry too much. This child is unusual. It seems to demonstrate an ability to grasp to the consciousness. Again, it seems to have a strength of its own. It can stand up for itself. It stands up for the underdog. These are unusual qualities in this child. Before you know it, if the parent has any degree of awareness, and if they don't have, that very soul consciousness is going to transmit some of its extrasensory forces to them. They may have it in the form of dreams, they may have it in the form of visions, or they may have some unusual conditions occurring in their home, because he's helping them now to lift up. So now he's going to be again the center of a big confusion, because everyone's going to be against that entire family. Now he's going to help that family to gain their own strength, gain their own peace, and gain their own consciousness. But he may not help them with any extrasensory force to make them be unusual. He may keep that for himself, but he has already extended them a portion of his divinity. The environment is going to be affected by him, because he's going to be opposing their whole way of thinking. But if he's forced to go to school by conventional methods, he'll have to go to school by conventional methods. And there are masters who live today who have gone through and got their BAs and MAs until they have complete all their educational studies, and then open up themselves as masters helping their communities. So we see that it is not so much where the master wants to be born, is what level of evolution that community or environment has reached that needs the lifting up. It's the combined devaluation or the combined degeneracy is bringing a master in to lift it up. A master really don't, you know, Jesus put it this way. Physicians don't need physicians. The healthy people don't need a doctor. He only goes to the sick people. You remember he says, why do you sit and eat with publicans? Well, if they weren't sick in some form or other, he wouldn't be associating with them. It wasn't that they don't have to be sick with disease from a physical way. You can be sick with the wrong type of attitude. You see? And still this is something he has to work with. So...
You said before, I think you said that God didn't need us. Something like this. I think God does need us, because
No, you didn't understand what you didn't understand what I said. When I said God wouldn't need us, we wouldn't be here.
Because God would need us.
Right.
Instrument through which he
said, if he didn't need us, we wouldn't be here.
We wouldn't be here, that is right. I wasn't that clear.
No. See, God became us. This is what you got to realize. We are the result of God. Now, don't get in your mind that this is some creature sitting on a throne making us in little clays and so forth. You know, we got this particular concept, we stuck with it until we are free from it. The divine principle is pure consciousness and pure energy at the same time. But when these two forces react, it becomes matter. So we see it as a material form. That's why he said, come let us make man in our own image and likeness. He didn't say, he didn't put three things together, two things to make the third thing. Man was the result of image and likeness. Image is the atomic principle, likeness is consciousness. Without this consciousness you cannot comprehend, and without the atomic principle you're not here. And you are the result of these two things. God is not two. God is one, manifesting as a result of three things: body, mind, and spirit. Then, if you want to put it that way, as three things, we say he's a Trinity. We are seeing the result in ourselves of these forces. The third part is this result: the self, the physical self, is the result. This physical self is the third part. It is a result of consciousness and energy coming together, ending up as a third part. Now, if it doesn't have these two forces pushing again to bring this third part into existence, this third part is not there. Now, you take science, and science starts to break down the third part, it returns back to the first two parts. So, every scientist who try to break down the third part, which is matter now we're looking at, ends up in energy and consciousness. The energy is gone away into the atmosphere as pure current, but then he realizes there had to be an intelligence to hold the thing together. So that is consciousness. The moment he realizes that there's intelligence involved, there's consciousness. So he can't seem to get out of the three things. See? So we know that we are the result of this force. Now when we don't say, I am God, because then right away, if I say I am God, then you're thinking of somebody sitting there. I am the result of this force. That's why when you go into yourself, you begin to experience this result. Yes, this oneness. You see this oneness. That's why we say you're achieving a state of at one end with it. Now you don't lose anything. Most people think they're losing everything, you know. Well, I'll show you what I mean. Here's a spoonful of water from the ocean. And I throw it back in the ocean. Has a spoonful of water lost its waterness? Has it lost its wetness? Has it lost the chemicals that it came out from? It's still there. Only the fact that I lift up the spoonful. Now, if you have the ocean, you have waves that are big and you have waves that are small. Now, which are the more important waves? The ones that are big or the ones that are very small? There's a slight difference, not in size, but in quality. Those that are big have much wind in it. And those that are closely floating right on the surface are identified with it. So we say the waves that are rippling are identified with the thing because it's closer to the water action, whereas the water that is jumping up is not so closely identified. Now. But they haven't lost anything, you see.
Different
state of consciousness. Right. Now, the closer you are to the realization of God, you are rippling. The further you are away from the realization of God, you are tidalizing. You're getting bigger and bigger. See? That's why we say the man has an ego. But spiritual people don't want to impress nobody because that's not their purpose. They are strictly trying to
identify,
you see. They're trying to identify, but they're in the identifying, they are not going to lose anything. You know, this is the hardest thing for a person to realize when he starts out looking inside, that he's going to lose his identity, he's going to lose his personality, he's going to lose. So you don't lose anything. In fact, you discover what you didn't have what you really should have is the first time you're discovering these things. That these are all yours. You're discovering something else. You see, the another thing is, you cannot live in that high state constantly. You cannot be putting food into your mouth to fill your stomach all the time. The same way, this is, remember, it says, this is also like spiritual food. This constant at-one-ment is something that you have to immerse in. Now, you have the whole ocean in front of you. And you go swimming in that ocean. Do you try to swim across the ocean? You swim where?
I would think if you were in constant meditation, as it seems, that there are some philosophies that think the more you meditate, the more you meditate, the more you meditate. And so you spend your life, constant life, in meditation. It seems to me a sterile existence. Because what good is meditation without the works that the realizations bring?
Well, this is what we're trying to point out. We must realize what we're pointing out. What passes for meditation may not be what meditation really is yet. Now, what meditation is supposed to do, this is something different. You cannot sit down and meditate all the time, just as you cannot be active all the time. It's part and parcel, back and forth. There's a reason why you meditate a certain portion and you work a certain portion. Now, those images or places where you've heard that people are sitting constantly in meditation never did happen. When the real facts are being revealed, that individual is not sitting totally all the time in meditation. If anyone went in their presence, you'll find out that he may be only there for a few hours, he'd get up and do something else. There is very few of them would be meditating more than 24, 36 hours steady. Some people say some of these individuals are spending their whole life in meditation. But when you do assess the facts and stay with them to see if they're really spending their whole life in meditation, it's not really true. Because they have to feed themselves in some form. So it is not really what we think it is. Now, we can get pretty hung up on this term meditation and not really be meditating. See, because you sitting down and closing your eyes is no proof that you're meditating. Your mind can be wandering. You see? Now, what you're trying to do in meditation is to experience that you are here. And as I said, the first three things you want to experience: peace, consciousness, strength. The fourth thing is a bonus. That is, the extrasensory forces, they come to you. You don't have to look for them. They come. The first three things are personal disciplines on one's nature. And that is what you are accomplishing in the meditation. You are actually sitting down and acquiring this inner consciousness, inner peace. Now, we can sit down here tonight and meditate for about 10, 12 hours, and many of us may not get anything, and some of us will get something. Yet we can sit down and meditate for 15 minutes, and everybody can get something, or none of us will get anything. You see? So, again, it's how we react inside. Well, conversation don't help us to experience meditative, and only by doing it. That's why I would like us to really get a little meditation now, so we can really know what we're doing inside. See? And unless you go into it and start to feel it, you don't know what you're trying to work for. No one can really say what he's going to feel in it until he experiences it. Then he knows what he's experiencing. That is what he's striving for, to experience.
One of my main interests is hypnosis and extrasensory perception. Do you believe that this could be the route to true meditation? This includes self-hypnosis.
No, I'm not laughing at the thing. I'm just thinking of myself saying the same thing to myself years ago too. That could have been the route. I had to learn the hard way too. You see, we get hung up on certain unfulfilled psychological wants or needs. The need for experience, the need for demonstration, the need for some attraction getting gimmick in the consciousness. Not that I say you personally want that, but this is something the consciousness seems to crave for. It's a strange phenomena and this form that we have to overcome. Self-hypnosis, nothing is wrong with it. People use it. Suggestion. You reinforce your confidence in yourself in many things. As a form of therapy, it's good. Extrasensory perception is good. But where's the peace of mind? Where is the awareness?
Awareness be heightened by hypnotic suggestion.
When we're talking of awareness, I'm not talking of, there's a different type of awareness I'm talking about. It is a level of consciousness. This consciousness in which the individual sees creation as it is. For the first time, he actually perceives the atomic structure from this very little brain of his. This is an unusual quality. That's why the masters say it has nothing to do with hypnosis, has nothing to do with extrasensory perceptions or any attempt in the psychic world. That when the person reaches this level of awareness, everything he sees it as it is for the first time. Now, he will see what the next man will make, but he'll never interfere and say, here, you're going to make a mistake with that invention. You'll see the man's attempt to make the mistakes. How many attempts that man will make before that particular law of creation is revealed. But he cannot interfere. He's strictly an observer. As we say, he's a first witness for God then. That's where I got the word Jehovah Witness. He is a true witness now. He's witnessing creation as it is going on. He's witnessing the thing as it is. But his purpose is to identify. His purpose is to be at one. Now he knows he has a purpose of being alive too. He knows where his purpose comes in. He sees his purpose. And he doesn't fight his purpose. Because sometimes his purpose may not be to what he wants or what he needs. It may be something very disconcerting to him. Something very aggravating and frustrating to him too. Something that will really tear up more people than do any good as far as he's concerned. Many people will be hurt, but his role may bring.
Has he lost his free will?
No. No, he hasn't lost his free will. He has it all with him. You see, the thing is, he's seeing the thing. Now, let us say we're going to meditate. See? The first thing you're trying to do, and this is what we wanted to do before, and that's what we came primarily for, and that's not the lectures, I got too involved in that. keep the mind at a point between the eyebrows.
I open wide, I keep for thee door of my heart. Open wide, I keep for thee. Wilt thou come? Wilt thou come? Just for once, come to me. Wilt thou come, just for once come to me? Will my days fly away without seeing thee, my Lord? Will my days fly away without seeing thee, my Lord? Night and day, I look for thee, night and day, I look for thee, night and day.
Night and day, I look Om Brahma Om Vishnu Om Shiva. Om Rama Om Vishnu Om Shiva 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 Om Rama Om Vishnu Om Shiva
These things are added to you. These are end results too. So the thing that is hard to develop or to maintain as a development is peace, consciousness, and strength. This is not these things we don't seem to have the capacity to hold on to all the time. Even the extrasensory abilities we don't hold on all the time. When we have them, they just come and go. And those who have them by accident, they lose them sooner or later. There are very few people who are born with it developed, and very few people spend all their time trying to develop it. And if they do develop, they only develop one or two of them, not too many of them.
And I go on for the rest.
Yes, and if you use that third one. But see, the thing is, once your inner consciousness begins to open, every unfinished part of your nature begins to open. Because you begin to see what has to be completed. And you devote the energies to those areas. Sometimes you bring certain qualities or abilities from previous development into focus. Happiness, you see, Shakespeare put it, this is Shakespeare we are saying it, happiness is nowhere to be found but in a contented mind. But what is a contented mind? It would be easy to find happiness in the contents of mind. This is a vast difference than in a contented mind. In the contents of mind.
Contents of mind rather than the content.
Because you don't know how to make the mind contented. There's no possible way that you can make the mind as it is contented. Because mind is consciousness already flowing. But what you place in that consciousness is what leads for happiness, leads for evaluation.
Well, this energy force you're talking about, you think that the spoken word can manifest everything that is energy.
Yes, it is. The only thing is what we call the audible life stream. This is the only thing.
Sorry, it gets back into the computer theory.
Well, it is a computer. The whole thing is sound. The whole universe is sound. It's ultrasonic. Oh, that's a funny stuff.
Like Jose wouldn't. They'll eat one if they that, don't you? Huh? Gee, they could use you.
Because you cannot get out of the sound frequency. There is no way. What is consciousness in the first place? Consciousness, the moment it is demonstrated in a baby, the first breath is sound. Now, the moment you're thinking in sound already. Now, when two clouds hit each other, we see the lightning first and we hear the sound last. But the sound is first before the lightning enters. Because contact is sound. Just because light travels faster than sound through a certain media doesn't say that the sound was not there. The sound is always there. Because everything you see around you is crystallized sound and light.
And you're working with groups. It's almost all of it, just the meditation part of it. If the sound is there, is necessary, then there would be wordy prayers or the sound would be what you would be just saying, would put the whammy to it, wouldn't it?
Well, the best answer for that would be these are folks here.
Well, see, I'm just showing my ignorance.
I would let them answer. Was there any praying or any?
Oh no, I don't mean that. But you what you were just saying, the going into the consciousness. We had just said a minute ago that the directing the word, making the sound, was what brought the result. And
that
said,
is part of it. There is more to it than that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it made the end. I'm not being argumentative, I'm just trying to understand it.
No, you see, this. You first think of a sound or a word in your mind to get your consciousness to flow in it. But that is not what it really is. That is only to help the individual to focus his consciousness. There is a difference, there is a particular transference of consciousness that goes on in meditation. Only a person who meditates will get this transference. Now, it's like two batteries. Here is a battery. And this battery is run down. And this battery is run down, and you have another battery. You take a jumper cable and you pull it across, and we give the battery a boost. And the battery will pick up and go on its own again. In meditation, this is what is occurring. There is a transference going on to the people in the room. It has nothing to do with prayer or anything. In that moments of complete silence, this is what is being transferred.
But this is the part you're talking about. Automatic, you didn't see.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This is what is flowing to the individual. This is what Jesus is saying. When two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst.